This is Nightmares of the Americas, Indigenous Tales. The show will start in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everybody, to Nightmares of the Americas, Indigenous Tales. I'm Joseph.
And I am Gabriel, everybody.
How are you doing today, Gabe?
I feel like I sound like Eeyore. Well, I'm Gabriel, everybody.
It's look okay. You can be Eeyore. Everyone loves Eeyore.
I guess.
You don't love Eeyore? I think so.
He's just all sad all the time. No one likes people to be sad all the time.
You know what, though? Even though he's depressed, they still let him, they still involve him in everything. And they don't put him down. And they understand that he's going through some things. And that's what I like about Eeyore.
Okay. Support your local Eeyores.
Yeah, sometimes I'm Eeyore. I love Eeyore.
Yeah.
Not like everyone else. Ooh, I like Tigger. Oh, you know, mainstream media. Just Tigger's pushing the Tigger agenda.
Way too much energy. He's like, calm down. That's,
man, yes, that stresses me out.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to?
Just work. Just working in this wonderful cold weather that we got here in California. I saw some of our friends posted on Instagram, and they have like negative temperatures. And I'm like, okay, I can't complain.
Yeah, it's chilling, like 60 degrees here. So, oh, girl,
let me get my parka. So
let me
cold.
See what this is. It's 5 o'clock at night and it is 59 degrees. You're a butthead.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, we're gonna be in the 60s all week. It's so freezing.
Oh man.
Meanwhile, people are freezing ramen, boiling hot ramen on Instagram in their negative degree weather.
Yeah, stay safe out there if you're in that part of the world where it's getting those temperatures. I know it can be rough. Stay warm.
Yeah, that's what we do.
What have you been up to?
You know, rocking and rolling and whatnot. Just doing what I do. Nothing much. Just kind of taking care of myself and hit the exercise room yesterday, and today I'm sore.
Feel the burn.
And then I know this weekend we're going to Little Tokyo for my mother-in-law's birthday in L.A. So we're doing some walking around there, which is really cool because I get to catch a bunch of Pokemon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're going this weekend. Nice. Yeah.
That'll be fun. That'll be cool. We're going to eat some salmon necks.
Yeah. And then you and me are going next month.
And we're going to eat some salmon necks.
So we're going to get more salmon necks.
Yeah. Yeah. Some, I can't wait for some sea urchin balls.
Do they have
to? Sea urchin is so good. Oh my God. It's so good. It's one of my favorite things to eat.
I will try.
I'm going to get like two orders, but we were watching, reruns of like Bizarre Foods, and they were in California and they were eating sea urchin. And Kristen goes, that looks weird. And I go, well, you know, those are the gonads. And she goes, you're disgusting. And then the host goes, yeah, the only thing that's edible on these little critters are the gonads. I go, see? She goes, you're stupid.
It gives you more power.
The virility. No.
Once you eat it, you can lift a truck over your head.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, yeah, I can't wait to eat a bunch of raw seafood. It's going to be so awesome.
Sounds good.
Oh gosh. So excited. But anyway, yeah, that's what we're just, you know, kind of getting stuff ready to do all that. And then, you know, just enjoying the wonderful California that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be hot in like a month.
No. So probably in about a month and a half. Cause in March, Maddie's birthday is in March. And then in March, mm-hmm. usually the kids closer to Easter, they're swimming already.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, you guys hear that? It's 66 degrees next week, and everyone in California is like, "Ooh, it's so chilly. Let me put my UGG boots on and my moccasins, and let me just all this Sorry, guys. We're extra. We're soft. You can barbecue on Christmas Day. What was that? My girl. They're in Chicago, and he goes, "Oh, I heard in California you could barbecue on Christmas Day. Like that's a big deal, but you can.
It's we cool. decorate our palm trees for Christmas.
That's what we do." But anyway, go ahead and follow us on all your social media places at Indigenous_Tales. We're everywhere around there. If you want to check out some of our merch, go to indigenoustales.threadless.com. Also, remember, we have an MMIW t-shirt and all kinds of stuff for sale. That's MMIW. When you buy that, we will be donating 100% of the proceeds to Indigenous Women's Resource Center. So remember, whenever you buy that, we're going to get all that money and send it to them. So thank you for supporting fellow brothers and sisters, and please keep doing that. Make sure you follow us on any of the major podcasting platforms that you listen to us on, because that really does help. And if you want to get a free sticker, all you have to do is screenshot that, send it to info@behealnetwork.com with your mailing address and your alias, and we'll shoot you out some stickers. This is worldwide, so it doesn't matter. Just send it to us, and we'll shoot you out some stickers. So go ahead and do that. So thank you for supporting the show and for giving us a rating. And remember to share on all social media sites that you are listening to us, because that helps us out a lot as well. Now that all that's done, let's get into the show today.
Yeah.
I hope you guys enjoyed last week's episode. It was pretty different. It was interesting. We did the little people.
Yeah, it was fun. I loved it.
Yeah, it was interesting. And then those little, just the forest spirits and little sprites and all kinds of stuff. So the little people just playing tricks, and some of them are a little too tricky. We won't talk about that anymore. So today we're going to jump back to South America, to Brazil and Venezuela. We're going to be talking about the Yanomami people and how there's a lot of miners, and there's like an industrial boom going on in South America right now, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to find mineral. They're drilling oil like crazy. Venezuela is really has a really wealthy, and the government, not the people, the government is very wealthy,
of course,
because of the mineral rights and the oil that they're drilling out there. Brazil, same thing. But it's also, you know, there's some negative effects to all that, such as poisoning the rainforest, poisoning the water in the rainforest, the rivers and streams, and also burning down the rainforest. There's a lot of fires that happen, and that really does affect the Yanomami people. So the Yanomami community members and authorities approximate 20,000 unauthorized gold miners, and they're referred to as Gari Mapiros, and they're operating within their territory. Despite being a nationally protected area where mining is prohibited, the Yanomami homeland faces an ongoing encroachment. So the sole indigenous woman elected to the Brazil Congress, her name is Joina Wapichana. She highlights the significant damage caused by these miners and influential economic forces eager to exploit the rainforest. This not only endangers biodiversity, but it also jeopardizes the survival of these indigenous communities. She's quoted saying, "The number of invaders has increased, both loggers and miners, who are at the service of people who have strong economic power, and organized crime is beginning to enter the territory. The environmental and health issue is getting worse and is putting the indigenous people at risk of extinction." Because it really is. So today's episode, we're going to go over the indigenous people. The next episode, we're going to talk about the miners and the problems that they're causing for the people. But this episode, let's celebrate this indigenous community. And we're going to go ahead and talk about some of their history and everything that goes on with these people.
Cool.
So the Yanomami people reside in the heart of the Amazon rainforest across the borders of Brazil and Venezuela. So Venezuela and Brazil, they're backed up right next to each other. And like most indigenous people, these are government borders, right?
Yeah.
Most indigenous people don't adhere to government borders, especially when it's their homeland. No. So because of that,
the border crossed me.
I'll show you. Yeah. Dude, what was it? What was that creature when he viciously shakes his fist?
Provocatively. What was it? Shook his fist.
It was the, was it the Chilicas? No.
Parambo? Or
no, was it was the last one we talked about. I can't remember what his name was, but he was the one where they were like, I'll show you. And he wanted to fight everybody all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they form one of the largest indigenous communities in South America. Their ancestral lands offer a blend of dense tropical rainforests and expansive highland savanna, creating a vibrant backdrop for their cultural practices. For generations, the Yanomami cherished their isolation from the Western world, preserving a way of life untouched by external influences, which was great because it wasn't until the mid 20th century that the Western groups started to get involved in these people's lives.
Should have just left them alone.
Well, you know, you got to have those anthropologists that have to go out and, oh, we're exploring. And then, oh, let's go ahead and talk to them. And then as soon as the anthropologists start writing books and notes and stuff about these people, then we know what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. They need some Jesus in them. Because they need some Jesus, it seems like I understand all these, there's different religions that do similar things, but it seems like it's always Christianity. And it's like, you know what? They need some Jesus. Yeah. It's like the U.S., like we talked about it before, like they need some freedom over there. They found a whole bunch of natural resources. I think they need some freedom. Let's go ahead and free them from themselves.
Yeah, it's never let me learn what I can about these people. It's let me teach them how to be like me.
Well, we have to westernize them because if they're not westernized, then how could they go to heaven?
They're savages. That's why.
But because the missionaries and the anthropologists showed up, the curious outsiders, they made their way into the territory. This encounter brought both gifts and challenges. So the Yanomami maintained a profound connection to their environment. Their knowledge of sustainable farming and hunting practices, intricately intertwined with their culture, stands as a testament to their harmonious relationship with the rainforest. As they navigate the complexities of increased contact, they strive to preserve their cultural identity and protect their land that they call home at all costs. However, it's been a struggle. And a struggle in the last 100 years is, I mean, that's to say the least. It's just been this whole, this entire universal theme that's going on. Their social structure system is characterized by a balanced distribution of power and influences within the community. While there are distinct gender roles, the men often assume the roles of shamans and hunters, and the women take on domestic roles, such as taking care of the home, raising the children, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's not really a high, like a patriarchal society, I would say. It's more that they do everything in a communal sense. Like everyone has their roles, but the decisions are made by a discussion. So they discuss and decide on matters that affect the community as a whole, and everybody has a voice. So everyone's voice is heard, and then once they make a decision, then that's where the group goes, or that's what the group does, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily men make the decisions or women make the decisions or anything like that. It's just in their society, men are the shamans, they're the hunters, women are gatherers, and they also are the farmers, and they take care of the kids.
Hmm. Interesting.
Individuals work together for the collective well-being and the resilience of the community. And this is kind of a unique social structure, but they had to because the habitat that they live in, the area that they live in, it's the natural world, right? Mm-hmm. So you're living in an area where without groups together trying to navigate this dangerous land, you're not going to survive. So it has to do with their survival. So just like that communal work, when you talk about their government in general, there isn't like a chief or a formal person that is in charge. It's a traditional political framework that is shared on values, cooperation, and a lack of hierarchy. So each tight-knit community where decisions are made collectively were held in each of these little villages, right? So these people in general, they're in separate villages. And because they're the original people there, they created the Western society, the governments deemed them one communal group, even though they're technically not one communal group. Does that make sense?
Kind of just lump them all together.
Exactly. Kind of like when they were talking about the quote unquote Eskimos, right? It's like anyone who lives in this area, we're going to call you Eskimos. But it's like, well, we're Inuit. You're an Eskimo. Well, we're, you know, we're Tlingit Eskimo. Like everybody in the same area, we're just going to call you the same thing because that's the only thing that we see. So like I said, there's no formal leaders in the traditional sense. Instead, those who guide the community are individuals respected for their wisdom and contributions. So it's more of an elder society. So when the elders, because they have wisdom, they've been there longer, they understand the needs of the community, they organically emerge as leaders. But they're, like I said, there's not a traditional leader or council or group like that. The entire village deals with conflict resolution as a pivotal part of community life, unfolded through open discussion. The goal is consensus, ensuring decisions resonate with the shared interest of all the community members. The communal spirit isn't just about unity. It's about the dedication to nurturing harmony with the social fabric. So when they need to punish someone, everybody jumps in and has their two cents to put in to punish someone for not living their life the way they should be living. The Yanomami cultivate a profound spiritual connection with the surrounding flora and fauna through their animistic beliefs. They acknowledge the spirits of the animals and the plants. And we talked about animism before in past episodes. All that means is that everything is alive, right?
Right.
So animals, plants have a spirit. Inanimate objects such as rocks, the sky, the sun, the moon, everything has a purpose and has a spirit. And that's their beliefs. Terming them as Zaporite. This distinctive communion is accentuated by the ceremonial use of Yopo, which is a potent hallucinogen facilitating the merging of human spirits with the essence of plants and animals. Centered to their cosmology is the notion that animals were once humans and they transformed as a consequence of ancient transgressions.
Whoa, so punishment. Interesting. I wonder what they did.
But they use this hallucinogen to help connect them spiritually with the animals and plants surrounding them.
Cool.
So they believe that there's a universe comprised of four parallel layers. Two of them are words in their language, and two of the words I understand are sky level and underworld. And I can't find the translations for the other two levels. Spiritual interpretations permeate every facet of their existence, attributing both favorable and adverse occurrences to ethereal forces. Now, shamans play a pivotal role in healing, addressing illnesses perceived as spiritual disruptions. So if something's wrong with you, you're getting sick, well, something's wrong with your spirit, right? And now a shaman has to perform a ritual to help you out.
I mean, yeah, I need one of those for when I have trouble sleeping, because I feel like when you have trouble sleeping, or you're like, I don't know, you just get that unsettling feeling, or you're stressed, I feel like that definitely affects your spirituality. It's like being sick in a way.
Sometimes take too many of those sleepy gummies and then you can't sleep. That's what my problem is. I take all kinds of different things. Like we take melatonin and then like CBD sleep gummies. And then Kristen's over there slamming like 20 milligrams of THC gummies. And then I'm like, oh, you're going on a real trip. That's what we're doing today. Like and then she's out. It feels like when I take like magnesium, like you take all these different things to try to help your sleep. I don't know. Lately, it just feels like maybe I need to just take nothing and just naturally sleep, maybe exercise and get tired before I go to something, you know, to wear myself out to go to sleep, to have good sleep, because I haven't had very good
sleepy time tea or something.
I do have sleepy time tea as well.
Usually that works for me, or melatonin knocks me out, but I don't know. I don't want to take too much. I don't want to get hooked to the stuff. I'm all itching for melatonin.
Yeah, we just stopped taking it, and then I think you I think you're not supposed, I think you're supposed to cycle off mm-hmm. of it, right? Something like that.
I think, yeah, if you regularly take it, I think you're supposed, you're not just supposed to stop. We're not doctors, so I don't know.
I don't know. I'll have to ask somebody. So there's a ceremony where they mourn, cherish, and celebrate departed ancestors, and it's called the Rihu ceremony. Consuming ashes in the form of soup becomes a symbolic art of reverence, signifying a desire for ancestral spirits to reside within them while upholding sacred connections. So that's kind of, that's a different thing that we haven't really talked about before. They actually consume the ashes of their loved ones that have passed.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, just so they can stay with them.
Interesting.
And be part of the, of themselves. Yeah. Hmm.
That definitely connects you. You're consuming their remains. That's interesting, though. I've never heard of anything like that.
I know. That's what Tupac had everyone smoke his ashes, right? In weed?
Oh, did he? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what, I think that was the story. It was like Tupac, or maybe that's just like an urban legend or something like that. But I remember somebody saying that. They were like, yeah, Tupac had a thing where all of his butt, knocked over the mic. Tupac had a thing where he was like, when he died, he wanted all of his buddies to roll him up with some, I mean, that was the 90s. So they didn't have the good like they do now. You're just that 90s weed. And then that, and then
you feel like Uncle Brownie on Reservation Dogs, that dirty old jar
of weed. Yeah, it's all, ooh, this is that dirt weed. What is wrong with you?
That's got bugs in it and stems and everything.
No, now they got stuff made with science.
Yeah, it can taste like gosh. Blueberry waffles. That's what I was telling. Cookies and cupcakes and everything.
That's what I was telling this old guy that was working with us. He was like, oh man, when I it sounded like he's in the clink with Prison mm-hmm. Mike. He's all, when I get out, it's like when he retires, because you can't smoke weed when you're working the oil fields. They drug test mm-hmm. you all the time. But he's like, when I retire, when I get out, he goes, I'm gonna get a joint, smoke it, and eat a whole pizza. And I go, okay, I'm gonna tell you something right now. You need to go to the dispensary and tell them, I want some 1970s weed. I don't want the stuff that we have now, because you're going to take two hits and your brain, you're going to go straight stupid. Your brain's going to fall out of your head, and you're not ready for that. You need to slowly
think you're a pizza.
So these people were, they're also farmers.
God, that's got to be so tough to do.
So they cultivate a number of crops. Oh yeah. But I mean, it's kind of insane how thousands of years people know how to do this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you just continue to do it. And as the world around you evolves, you still continue to do it. You just slightly tweak it until you have this amazing land that you've just been cultivating crops for thousands of years. But this place is really cool, too, because there's plantains all along the edge, you know, just all throughout the rainforest, bananas.
Plantains, they hang from trees. Kramer, that's all it makes me think of. So, like, ooh, get some plantains. And Jerry's like, you're not getting any plantains. When he gets kicked out of the fruit store, he gets banned.
The fruit stand. Yeah, he's all plums with red in the middle. Plantains. So they also eat this cassava. It's a hard tuber. And it's like the dietary cornerstone of their food. And it's a starchy kind of thing that they eat, starchy tuber. And they prepare it in different ways because of the rich soil. They're able to grow a bunch of root vegetables like yams, sweet potatoes. And that's like a really big part of their diet, the tubers in general. But the cassava, it holds a very high status beyond its adaptability to the rainforest climate. It can be grated and pressed into extract its moisture, yielding a dense flour. And the flour that they use from this is called the farinha. The flour becomes a fundamental ingredient, forming the basis of a variety of dishes that they eat. So when they farm, they do like the cycle farming practices where they'll have a field and they'll cultivate it through a period of time, and then they'll let it set, and then they'll let that all the carbon and all the good stuff to go, all the nutrients go back into the soil. And as that's happening, they move to a different plot of land and they cycle back and forth to make sure that they don't deplete the land of nutrients, mm-hmm. which is one of those things that, again, like for thousands of years, they knew how to do this.
Yeah.
But now today, all of our food in the U.S. has zero nutritional value at all because it's not about.
You're getting everything but the nutrients.
And then what did they say? Then they go, "Well, take some multivitamins because you don't have anything." So now you got to take a whole bunch of vitamins just so you can get your food, yeah. your nutrition. And then some doctors you talk to and they don't want you to take vitamins. They're like, "Oh, you just, you know, I think one doctor was like, "Well, I think the vitamin industry is just," maybe I was talking to a conspiracy doctor.
He's all, "You got to look,
the vitamin industry is just taking advantage.
For big vitamin. They don't want to trying to put you in the know. Look out for big vitamin."
Yeah. And then some, like I went to my primary care physician and I was talking to the nurse and she was like, "Oh, how's your family?" And I was like, "Oh, my wife's sick." I said, "She gets sick pretty often." She goes, "Does she take multivitamins?" And I was like, "Well, no, I take them all the time, but I try to get her to take them and she doesn't." And then she's like, "Well, she needs to take multivitamins." And I talked to the doctors. She's like, "Well, I don't know. You know, still on the fence about that. Maybe they work. Maybe they don't. Mostly you urinate most of the vitamins out, so it just passes through your bladder and blah, and starts helping." I'm like,
I'm not even really a doctor, so I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And then turns out he grabbed a mop and then walked out. And I was like, wait a minute. Why did I undress in front of that man?
No, but the food now, it's just, I mean, it's more for convenience. It lasts longer. So they got all kinds of added preservatives and chemicals and all that nonsense. So it's completely different than what those people are eating.
Yeah, and Bill Gates controls all that, so we'll have to worry about him too. With his apples.
All the microchips in the apples.
You know the Bill Gates apple?
That's scary.
It's APOL. It's not apple. Mm-hmm. It's apple. And it's supposed to be able to, like, it's genetically modified where it can, the shelf life is like a year or something like that. An apple should not be able to last a year without,
I'm not eating it.
Like, breaking down. But these are the same people that are like, "Don't eat McDonald's."
Yeah.
And then they have the picture of the like McDonald's cheeseburger behind the glass. And they're like, "Oh, this is from, you know, 2020 and it's 3 years, 4 years later, and it's still there." Mm-hmm. But you just created an apple that does that. Like, I think that's worse. I know I'm poisoning myself with the cheeseburger. I shouldn't be poisoning myself with a fruit. That shouldn't be happening.
It's scary.
But indigenous people, they've known since forever. And maybe it's the creator telling them. Maybe it's the shamans that are talking to the spirits. Maybe it's something just just happens organically. The star people. Who knows? It's something that just draws indigenous people to understanding how to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
When they do plant for these farms, it's a sacred ceremony as well. Seeds are carriers of life and they're sown with reverence, and the growth of each plant becomes a testament to their connection to the earth, to the people on the earth. The rhythms of planting and harvesting, they're supposed to echo the heartbeats of their symbolic relationship with nature. So when they are harvesting, planting, when they're doing anything with their plants, they're doing it with purpose, and they're thanking the earth for the providing the food for them. Now, because plantains and bananas were just kind of are naturally grown, they also would grow them in their farms, so in their gardens. They would also be they'd replant them all around, and then they would have their bananas and plantains. And it's funny because when you, to us living in California, it's like, "Oh man, that'd be cool to kind of see like a banana growing on a tree It reminds me, I had a buddy and he's from Wisconsin, and when he went to California to visit, this is like 2004 or five or something like that, me and him flew back to California. We're chilling. And then when we landed, he goes, "Oh my gosh, can I climb one of those trees to get a coconut?" And I go, "Where the hell do you think you are?" And he goes, "Well, aren't those coconut trees?" I'm all, "No, those are And then I'm all, no, those are dates. Like I'm all correcting because we have all the date trees and everything, but those aren't even local. Those are like, mm-mm. They're not natural to California. Those are brought over. Right. Yeah. But in his brain from Wisconsin, he's like, oh, palm tree, coconuts. Right. Yeah. But because we live here, I think palm tree, it's dates because we have dates all around us, mm-hmm. and stuff, which I love dates.
I would love a banana tree in my yard. I love bananas.
So these people eat bananas and plantains daily, and they also use them as symbolic offerings and rituals. Bananas and plantains embody the resilience and abundance of the rainforest. So because these are typical rainforest foods, they use them as offerings to their deities.
Cool.
So we're going to offer tobacco. They're going to offer bananas and plantains. Which makes sense, because if that's what naturally grows around you, you would think, well, then that's what the earth wants, because that's what they're giving us.
Yeah, giving back.
So that's a symbolic gesture.
That's cool.
So they would also hunt different game birds for protein sources, and they would also eat fish from the streams, and they would also eat monkeys.
Whoa, I don't know if I'd eat a monkey.
Which I never really even thought about that, mm-hmm. but I mean... it really contributes to their protein intake. It's you eat monkeys, and if monkeys are available, why wouldn't you eat monkeys?
I imagine monkeys are very tough. Like their meat would be tough.
I hate monkeys. So I just don't like monkeys in general because of Planet of the Apes. So I know a lot of people see monkeys and they like them because they're like, oh, they're kind of like people. So I bet you like,
or they're cute.
Well, I know like Western society. Yeah. You would think like, I can't eat that. It's too close to a human, right?
Well, I mean, if you're in the jungle and you got to get protein and there's monkeys around, having a monkey barbecue.
So they would eat squirrel monkeys. They would also eat howler monkeys.
Whoa, those are scary.
And howler monkeys. They are, but they would also eat capuchin monkeys.
Oh, wow. Those are the smart ones.
Are they? I don't know.
I think those are the ones a lot of people, yeah, they get like tested on and stuff.
Oh, don't test on the monkeys.
No, don't do that. You can eat them, but out of respect, respectfully eat them.
Respect. They would roast the monkeys. Sometimes they would steam the different fish and some of the monkeys. They would wrap them in leaves and put them over hot stones covered in a pit. So they can get all that goodness into them. Mm. So they had some different techniques of cooking.
Probably
they would also boil them. Oh yeah, for sure. And you're going to get that good flavor in them. Mm. What's interesting is the cassava root vegetable that is the staple of their diet. Similar to our corn, right? Mm-hmm. They had to boil it to make it edible.
Wow.
Which always makes me think like, who was the first one to think, I'm going to eat that. And then if they did, they're like, well, he died. So let me try it a different way.
Yeah.
And then you die. And then someone else goes, no, 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 no. They ate it wrong. And then they cook it. And then finally everyone's like, we figured it out. We're going to grate it, make it into a flour. Or we're going to boil it first and then dry it out. And once we dry it out, we can make it into a flour. And then thicken, use it as a starch to thicken different meals. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of one of those things that I've always thought about.
Trial and error, maybe, or possibly somebody could have had a dream from the ancestors and was like, "Hey, go boil this plant." Then they took it back to their people. Who knows?
Yeah, because what they would do is they would harvest this root vegetable. And then they had to process it. So by processing it, they would peel it and grate it. Mm-hmm. They would grate the root to extract the like the starchy pulp. And then the pulp was placed into a large press, which was made from woven materials to extract the liquid. And the liquid contains toxic substances that need to be separated from the pulp. So they had to like...
There's a lot of steps. Squeeze,
like there's a big process. There's a lot of steps.
They were shown. They had to have been shown.
Something had to happen. They would use blow darts, bows and arrows, and other tools adapted to the rainforest environment. They would hunt birds and monkeys, like previously stated, and they would clean them, gut them, and in some cases, butcher the animal for consumption right on the spot, right? That's what you have to do when you go hunting. Mm-hmm. The game was then cooked using methods like open fires, boiling, steaming, depending on what type of food. They would also gather different fruits, nuts, that were and other edible plants around the area. And the fruits and nuts were consumed raw, but everything else they did cook. They live in these houses that are called shababonos. They can house anywhere from 50 to 400 people.
Wow.
So they're constructed mainly of thatched palm leaves and wood. Each family had their own section within the inside of the structure. And the only thing that separates these families are large wooden beams. The central area is used for games and ritual activities. And I have pictures of these that I'll send you that you can post. And it looks essentially like a big circle, a very large circle. And on the inside, it's just open. So it looks like a big ring. And they can be very large structures. And within the structures itself, they have these little family communal areas where they have these woven net, I guess you would call them hammocks. Mm-hmm. They're just like these woven net beds that families could sleep on. And the circle shape, it represents unity and equality within the community. And the open area, it really is pretty neat to see like this open area, because you can see the different activities that are going on in some of these pictures. The design allows for ventilation, but also protection from the elements, because I'm assuming that it gets very warm down there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these shabonos, they were designed to be adaptable to the semi-nomadic lifestyle. So if they did need to pick up and leave and relocate an entire area, the structure can be taken down very quickly and then put up very quickly. Hmm. So kind of like the teepees that that different tribes use as well. So when they did hunt, they would use, like I said, bow and arrows, and they were carved from resources offered by the jungles. They were not only tools, but extensions of the hunter's spirits. The arrows were tipped with points crafted from sharpened bone, and those were specifically what they would use to hunt the monkeys. But when they would hunt the monkeys, it was more like a ballet than a typical hunting kind of sense, because you got to think, these monkeys, they're swinging from trees. They're all over the place, and you have to be very precise. So it's amazing to think that they can even, people that shoot arrows, when I see like competitions and stuff like that, mm-hmm. there's people on Instagram, I watch videos and all kinds of things. And when they shoot their arrow, I'm like, how the hell did they do that? Like this, it's just insane to see the connection between the person and the instrument, the tool used to hunt with. Mm-hmm. So when they would fish, they would use spears or nets, and they would wade in the water and wait there and spear them. Or they would set up their fish traps, their nets, and they would come back and then pick up the fish. So because these people were really not exposed to Western society until later on, they faced a lot of challenges, and currently there's a number of threats that these people are going through. Mostly it's the illegal gold mining, and what they're doing is they're deforesting their environment. So when you start ripping up the trees, because a lot of them are they're mining and mm-hmm. loggers. The loggers are an issue because deforestation leads to environmental degradation.
Right.
And then because the environment's going away, you have your food source going away. The miners, on the other hand, are dumping their chemicals that are used to sift through the gold or to pull the gold out of the earth, whatever they're using. It's also polluting the water system. And because it's polluting the water system, it's poisoning the people when they eat these types of fish, right? So that's a big issue that they're going through right now. In 2020, during the pandemic, because there were so much interaction with Western societies, they also had a big hit of COVID, and because their limited access to healthcare resources, it really affected their tribe as well.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
Because yeah, problems like that, you don't have the immune system to fight certain diseases, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you get COVID, and now that's an even bigger issue, and then it could decimate your entire people, right?
Yeah.
It's like smallpox in the, you know, 1500s or something. Mm-hmm. Similar to it.
Yeah.
Indigenous rights and land protections, they remain critical issues. And there are advocates both in Brazil and Venezuela. However, what the things I've been reading were, there's a lot of corrupt government officials that are allowing these people, yes, that are allowing the illegal mining, and they're turning a blind eye. They don't want to recognize it. Mm-hmm. So, it's supposed to help with the economy, and because it's helping the country, they would rather just, you know, turn a blind eye to it to help the economy for their country,
right?
Versus being advocates for indigenous rights and their communities.
Yeah, that's so sad.
In 2022, there was 308 tribal members who died from diseases.
Wow.
And 50% of the deaths are children under 4, and they're from malnutrition and sadly violence from these illegal miners. And the death rate has doubled in 2023 from malaria, when they didn't have issues with malaria, but when these miners showed up, they started introducing new diseases. And then because of that, their population started to dwindle. The way they're projecting Yanomami people, they're projecting their population to be cut in half by 2025. So you go from 20,000 people, 30,000 people to 10,000 people or they have 30,000 people. So they're expecting it to be around 50,000 people or 15,000 people by the end of 2025, if things don't change. Gold mining has also introduced tuberculosis and mercury poisoning. And like I said, malnutrition, because they're disrupting the natural habitat that these people use to thrive.
Yeah, they're getting rid of all their food. So they're just, I mean, it's just so horrible. Makes me mad.
So last year alone, 3,000 children were diagnosed with malnutrition. And that's 3,000 children that were reported. So 3,000 children, they were able to take them to the hospitals. And because they were reported, they got the numbers from that. And that was in 2023. So when you think about it, it's like, oh my gosh, 3,000 children malnourished when they have this abundant resource, resourceful land that they live on. But it's also because they're losing their protein sources. Mm-hmm. When you poison the waters and poison the animal and take away the survival of the monkeys and all the other animals that they use as protein sources, now they're stuck with fruits and vegetables. And I'm sure they burn a ton of calories just living in this area and their daily activities. And you need a higher caloric intake to survive out there.
Yeah, you're limiting their food source.
So last year, Amazon Watch published Blood Gold, an expose in partnership with the Association of Brazil's Indigenous People. It's the APIB, showing that the supply chains of technology, electronics, and automotive giants could be tainted by Brazil gold illegally mined in Amazon indigenous territories. So because these major corporations go to Brazil and go to Venezuela because the regulation is very laxed, or there's zero regulation in general, they go there so they can, it's a cheap production, cheap labor, and then you don't have to ask questions and no one's bothering you. It's kind of like Foxconn. So Foxconn was the company, I don't know if they still are, but as of, I know, 10, 12 years ago, they were the company that makes iPhones. And China, they're the ones who have the facility. We talked about it before in one of our previous episodes, one of our early episodes. They have one of the facilities where they have the jump nets in the factory because people were jumping off ledges and trying to kill themselves because it was so horrible to live in and the living conditions. They had media attention. The media was like spotlighting them. And everybody was saying, well, don't buy Apple products because you're supporting this slave, quote unquote, slave labor. Mm-hmm. And it ruined the entire facility, the people's living conditions. The expose forced them, the company Foxconn, to increase wages, increase safety precautions, which is, these are all positive things, right?
Right.
Decrease work hours. So now you can't work 20 hours a day. You're limited to 14 hours a day or something like that. And because of that, they were supposed to, quote unquote, make living better. And it was supposed to be like a human rights thing or whatever. And what they ended up doing was obtaining all these checklists. They hit the goals. They did everything. And then the company was saying, well, because your way of life is just better now, your work is everything's better, mm-hmm. then we're going to charge you more. So because your food is more nutritious, now instead of charging you so much money to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, we're going to increase that wage. So they ended up making less money than what they previously made. And then all the Western society patted themselves on the back and started clapping like, oh, we made changes and we did better human rights stuff and yay for us. Well, that same company moved to Brazil.
Wow.
Because it's cheaper, less regulation, and no one's talking about the Brazil factory. They're only talking about the China factory, right? So all these different factories that are popping up in Brazil, including oil field companies, they're drilling. There's no regulation, so they could dump wherever they want to dump. And all of this is affecting this indigenous community that are fairly new to Western society. So they don't really have a lot of advocacy for them. You have a bunch of Western people who are smiling and giving themselves a thumbs up and making videos and saying these positive things like, I'm going to make change. But the government itself is not changing. Man. And that's a big problem. And we need the rainforest to survive. The whole entire world needs the rainforest to survive, so we can have oxygen.
Yeah,
you know, a little thing we breathe.
It doesn't just affect. I mean, it affects them tremendously, but it affects everybody too. But people don't like out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. People are like, well, it's just affecting them. I can go on living. It's like, yeah, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you hear people, you see, it's mostly college kids, and I hate to pick on college kids, but I'm going to. But it's mostly college kids that are complaining about capitalism because they have political leaders that they see as celebrities for some reason. I don't know why the hell people are considering politicians celebrities.
I don't know.
But the politicians that they're considering celebrities are like, oh, down with capitalism. Yet they have a store. They have a merch store. And they're doing like drop shipping, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you don't know where any of your resources are coming from. And I mean, a lot of people do drop shipping, but don't complain about capitalism and then have a drop shipping like, oh, pro this, or, you know, we're giving back. No, you're not. And how do you go to office and the job pays? Yes, it pays excessively, $150,000, $200,000 a year. But then you leave office after 4 years and you're a millionaire.
Yeah.
When normal society, you can have a job. In California, if you make $150,000 a year, that's not much money.
No, it sounds like a lot.
You're not living like it sounds like a lot until you get taxed, and then you're not making a lot. Mm-mm. So it's a lot of people like that fight, I'm going to fight the man, but you're doing it with an iPhone and a MacBook. And now you're I don't know how much they are, but your $30 Stanley cup. And your TikTok videos, and you're using all these sources that are based off of capitalism, but you're complaining about society. What I know used to do that all the time. And what they would do is like, I have babies now, so I'm going to protest Oshkosh Bagosh, because Oshkosh uses Malaysian children to do all this other stuff. And I'm like, you're literally drinking Starbucks and you have an iPhone. Mm-hmm. So I said, are you going to protest Apple products? And she goes, why? I go, well, the living conditions in the factories from Foxconn, they're inhumane. And people are killing themselves because they work in these facilities. And she goes, well, I haven't read that. And then all of a sudden they never keep up with it. And then they just go back to doing what they're doing. But It's hard to be some social justice warrior when you're supporting all these negative things. And I'm not saying don't support them. I'm not like advocating to say don't support any of these things. We need things now to survive. You can't live without a phone now. You can't live without the internet. You can't even apply for a job without the internet. No, now, right?
You can't even go into like the building. They'll be like, oh, it's online. Go to our website.
Yeah, they'll give you like a QR code. Oh, just scan it with your phone. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a phone, or a smartphone, you're SOL. So I get it. Like this is the way the world's going, and these are the new things. But we also need to preserve what we have. And I know like California is screwing over California, quote unquote, so progressive. But it's very interesting too that progressive and conservative alike, when you get down to the nitty gritty, policies are similar. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go ahead and put all these dams because our water resource management is shit. California has terrible water resource management. Oh, we all know this.
Yeah.
Every year we're in a drought because they run off thousands and thousands and thousands of gallons of water into the ocean.
Yeah.
So they decided we're going to put up dams and we're going to hold this water. And what does that do? It disrupts the entire salmon population. And now when you have indigenous people who have rights to fish on these lands for salmon, all the salmon are gone and you're killing native salmon populations. And now you're disrupting everything else. Yeah. So I get it. There's give and take, but government, we're anti-government. So I'm just saying we go on rants and stuff like that. Think about what you're make conscious efforts. If you want to help or if you want change to happen, these people specifically, they need something to happen. I don't know what we could do. We'll get into the atrocities that they're going through next week mm-hmm. in the next episode. But that was just some information about the Yanomami people. Mm-hmm. They're still thriving and they're one of the closest to their indigeneity, I would say, than a lot of different groups in the Americas because they haven't been polluted with Western society for that long.
Yeah.
It's been about 100 years.
They've been a tight,
and that's not a long time.
Tight-knit group for a lot of years.
Right. And because like we talked about, the Amazon is just, it's scary. The Amazon, Australia, Florida, those are all places that are just, I had to throw Florida in there because Florida's wild.
Florida's, they ain't got no rules over there.
You know, hopefully things can change. Hopefully there is something with social media getting out there. And I think I think we're going to see exponential change throughout the world because of social media.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And you've already kind of seen it lately. And I know people get upset because media is biased wherever you live. Mm-hmm. And there was that one girl, I can't remember her darn name. You remember her. It was the blonde girl who her boyfriend allegedly killed her in the Tetons and it was in Florida. He flew back to Florida, I think.
Oh,
and then they found him in the Everglades.
Yeah.
Dog the Bounty Hunter was after him.
Last year or 2 years ago, something like that.
It was a couple years ago. I can't remember her name.
I can't
remember. But anyway, people were getting upset because they were like, well, I understand. I'm a humanist, right? And I don't think anyone deserves death. I think that people just need to survive and get along and coexist together mm-hmm. and understand each other's differences and celebrate them. And I saw this other side of Instagram because it was all over the place, right? And they were like, well, if she wasn't this blonde, cute, white girl, then would the media have fought and jumped on it as much as they would have if it was a black girl or an indigenous woman or, you know, someone who wasn't the traditional quote unquote American, mm-hmm. right? I would like to believe, yes, I would hope, but there's a lot of factors involved too. Gabby Petito. That was her name, right?
Yeah. That was her name.
I think that was her name. Yeah. And, I mean, that poor girl, she didn't deserve any of that. She was with this monster who assaulted her and abused her. And that's just, no one deserves that.
No.
I'm hoping that as things go forward, you see it in social media that causes are catching fire. And I'm hoping that it does impact the MMIW movement because it does seem like there are just a number of women that go missing that social media that they just don't get involved. Mm-hmm. How does it trend? I don't know. Maybe it's an algorithm thing. Maybe, you know, who knows? There's a lot of true crime podcasts out there. We do a little true crime on our show as well. Hopefully, with our voice, even though we're small, we can maybe get things going when we hear of new cases. Mm-hmm. I know Gabe's been put, when Gabriel finds out about certain things and certain missing Indigenous women, he posts it on our social media.
Yeah.
We ask you guys to repost it on your social media, not for us, because we don't care about getting credit for anything like that. We care about the women that are being affected by this issue.
Yeah.
So hopefully little things like that. If little change is made, hopefully these people will be able to keep their individualism and also be able to survive, because it would be so devastating for 30,000 individuals to go from 30,000 to a couple of thousand within a few years.
Yeah, that'd be horrible.
And that would just be irresponsible as just, you know, someone that lives on this planet, mm-hmm. that where it's 2024 and this thing is still happening. So that was just my little part for this episode, and hope you guys enjoyed it. We're going to post some pictures of these people, and a lot of stuff we talk about, usually it's past tense, and a lot of this that I was talking about is present tense, because they currently still reside in the same type of living conditions, yeah. that they have for thousands of years. And that's what makes these people very special. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to change, because that's what they know.
Yeah.
And because of their food resources dwindling, it kind of reminds me of, was it the Inuit or the, that were eating, that have the connection with the seals? Was it the Inuit?
I can't remember.
There was a story that you read where the woman was sick and she ate seal and seal blood and she became healthy again.
It might have been them. I can't remember,
but I think it was the same group. It was a Northern Territory Canadian. It was one of the episodes that we talked about, mm-hmm. the group of people. I'm sorry that we're misremembering or can't remember, but if you guys want to message us at info@behealnetwork.com and tell them like, hey, this was it. But those people, just like them, when their diet was changed, they started to get different diseases.
Yeah.
And similar to that, the Yanomami people, they're starting to eat a more Western diet when they, to obtain their protein sources. And because of it, their body's not agreeing with it. And then they're starting to lose people because of that as well.
Yeah. It just like throws your immune system into shock. It's not good.
No. I mean, it's like when everyone was moving west and all the Western tribes, they were like, well, here's some coffee and here's some, you know, what's that hard tack and all that other, mm-hmm. here's some flour and just cook it. And they're like, what the hell? We don't know what any of this stuff is. Are you kidding me? And it hurts you. So,
yeah.
So we'll go into the gold miners next week.
Yep.
And we hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And if you guys did, please follow us on any of the major podcasting platforms. You listen to us, subscribe, all that stuff. It really helps us out. Go to any of the major, go to Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, follow us at Indigenous_Tales. And also, if you want to check out some merch, go to indigenoustales.threadless.com for that stuff. So until next time, I'm Joseph.
And I'm Gabriel.
You'll be remembered by the tracks you leave.
And remain close to the Great Spirit.
And don't trust monkeys. Support eating monkeys, because I don't trust any of them.
Monkey
the
barbecue.
Smarter they are, the harder you fall. I don't know. Maybe that's the thing.
The monkey probably uprise.
Not. Yeah, it'll happen. Oh, gosh. Bye.
If you're not spiritually connected to the earth and understand the spiritual